The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
The week trending. Martha Brennan joins us from Cork, journalist with the Irish Examiner here in studio in Dublin. Anton Savage is with us. But Anton, I'm going to ask you to start with a story that those of us of a certain age will remember well, but I've discovered that people of a younger generation know little or nothing about, because every time we start listing the Irish Olympic gold medal winners, there's a name left out, and that's Michelle Smith de Bruin. Despite the fact, as she pointed out yesterday, she still has three of them that were never taken away from her.
This is like the old Communist Party pictures that had Stalin and the Politburo all lined up. And one year the picture would be slightly different because one of them would literally be airbrushed out because he'd been sent to the gulag or assassinated. So it has been for the last 25 years with Michelle Smith de Bruin, which is she is simply not spoken of. We talk about all of our medalists and we don't mention the woman who is the single most successful Olympic athlete in Irish history, given that she has the three golds and the one bronze. The reason, of course, that we don't mention this is because subsequent to the Olympics in which she won the three golds and the one bronze, she was found to have tampered with a urine sample. She wasn't found to have been using drugs, but the sample was found to have been tampered
with. Because they couldn't find the drugs in the sample that they felt might have been there because there was so much whiskey
booze
in the urine.
Yes, exactly. If you put enough Tullamore Dew in a sample, it becomes difficult to find anything else. Not obviously that that was the whiskey brand in question, I'm just guessing. So she then did a relatively good job of going away. She went and became a qualified barrister. She's been working as a barrister ever since.
It's supposed to be an excellent one.
Yeah, and has largely kept herself out of the sort of the sporting public eye. Of course, as soon as we start winning medals, it comes up again. And Gavin Riley, late of this parish, tweeted a picture of all of Ireland's gold medalists and had her in the middle of it. And of course, that kicked off with people saying, Gavin, hang on a minute, she doesn't deserve them. And the debate began again. And Liveline on RTE, beginning being Liveline, rang her and said, gosh, Michelle, would you fancy giving us a statement? She gave them a statement which responded to their question by saying, 25 years ago, I won my medals. I'm very proud to have won my medals. There's nothing wrong with my medals. Leave me alone in relation to my medals. That statement, of course, has since got separated from the programme that originally asked for it. So now it looks like, out of the blue, Michelle Smith de Bruin thought, nobody has thought about me for a quarter of a century. I should start
talking. Yeah, but in fairness, in the statement, she congratulated our winners, gold medal winners, Fintan McCarthy and Paula Donovan, but she gave about three times as much space in the statement to her own achievements. Martha Brennan, you're way too young to remember this controversy when it happened, but are you even familiar with it, or is this all news to you?
It actually, honestly, I am too young. So I was born the year that Michelle won. And I found it so funny when all of this came out, and I was, because I Googled afterwards, it was obviously a huge day for Cork with the medal, and I Googled other winners, and I had never heard of Michelle, which I found upsetting because she was the first Irish woman to win an Olympic medal as well, and she, the most successful Olympian, as we already said. And yeah, I had never heard of any of it, and I was reading the story, and it was shocking. I guess I'm from the Katie Taylor generation, where, you know, we had Katie. Now we have the two lads, and yeah, it's one that I hadn't heard about before, and it's a really interesting story.
Interesting, but what do you make of it?
I don't know. You know, it's one of those ones that you can read back and forth, and, you know, she has kept herself out of the spotlight, so there isn't too much to research about it. But, you know, like we said, they couldn't test the sample, but she does still have the medals. You know, those are still her medals, and I think she probably does deserve to be included in the lineup when we do talk about all of the winners.
It is worth pointing out, Matt, because I know there will be people of the generation who remember it who will be shouting at us to point it out. It wasn't just that a sample was tampered with. It was that there was a stunning step change in performance. Somebody who had been a solid journeyman, let's be clear, at being at Olympic level, a solid journeyman.
But she was never in the top 25 in the world until she met Eric de Bruin, who became her boyfriend, later became her husband, who himself got a 4-year ban for doping, a discus thrower, and he started training her. Her body shape changed dramatically. I think that's not unfair to say.
As did her times. And she dropped the kind of times, like 16 seconds, she shaved off some of her times. Extraordinary accelerations, which she will maintain, was that she had changed her training and diet and things got better. But people will look somewhat askance at that, and the debate will clearly run and run.
OK, let's move on a little bit, but also Olympics related. The US women's soccer team, Martha, won in a penalty shootout against the Netherlands today in the Olympics to get to the semi-finals, which guarantees a medal. But the team lost an earlier game to Sweden in the Olympics, and that meant that they were attacked in their own home country by those who regard it as sort of punishment for being too woke. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so the US has kind of had a few shocks between Simone Biles and the US soccer team. The US women's softball team also was a big shock when the news came out about that. But yeah, the soccer team was an interesting one because people, so I was actually in America recently, my dad lives there, and I heard people debating about this, you know, that the women's soccer team are one of the best in the world, and they're also very well known for protesting social injustices. They're not afraid to, you know, take a knee and those kind of a things. But people in America were actually saying, you know, it's fine to do it on an American stage, and in their opinions they thought maybe they shouldn't be doing it on an international stage. And then, of course, Donald Trump got in on the debate. He's been quiet for a while, so the news kind of passed about this one. But it's what he called wokeism, and he said it was dangerous, and all the really staunch conservatives were backing him, and it became a huge thing on Twitter. And it's another one that the debate is just keep running around in circles about it.
But it was great to see today the winning penalty, the one of the most crucial penalty was scored by, of all people, Megan Rapinoe, who really gets up their noses more than anybody else.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's nothing like, I think, strong women on an international stage to kind of get that group going. But it's an endless culture war over in America. I mean, Fox News is saying this and everyone else is saying this, and it just depends what side you're tuning into that you're going to see. It's very, very different life over there.
Let's get to the Irish culture wars. And Anton, tell us about how Rory Cowan from Mrs. Brown's Boys has been caught up in them.
You know that line in Anchorman where they end up having the huge fight and one person kills another with a trident and somebody whoops out a hand grenade. And at the end of it all, Ron Burgundy reflects, isn't it, and says, well, that escalated quickly. There was huge elements of this to Rory Cowan. Rory Cowan, I'm not making this up, he had a sandwich. Now, he had a very expensive sandwich. But Rory Cowan was in Mrs. Brown's Boys, so he can undoubtedly afford expensive sandwiches. He had a sandwich in town, he took a picture of himself and went, here I am, having an expensive sandwich, isn't it lovely? To which the internet decided...
Because he was sitting indoors, was he? Or was
yeah,
he
and it's a return to normal. I think he was indoors, but he was double vaccinated and he was within whatever distance you have to be and he'd shown whatever authority you have to show your COVID. So he was legally having an expensive sandwich and people decided he was a Nazi. Now,
a Nazi? Why would you have a Nazi pylon for eating an expensive sandwich?
You will be familiar with Godwin's Law. Godwin's Law is that the law that was originally established to message groups in the US and has come to be to be about all internet dialogue, which is that the longer a piece of dialogue continues on the internet, the greater the statistical likelihood that someone will bring up Hitler. And in this instance, what we are seeing, and this is happening more and more, the distance from first tweet, Instagram, post, whatever it might be, to Hitler is getting shorter and shorter. We're getting much more efficient at going straight to Hitler. And that's what happened. Rory Cowan went, here I am having a sandwich. And somebody went, you're a Nazi.
What do you make of this, Marta?
I could not get over this one. I saw it, the reports about it, and I was just thinking, poor Rory. I mean, he went out. Now, he did buy himself a 21-euro sandwich.
21 euro? Right, what was in the sandwich for 21 euro?
It's a club sandwich, Matt. Oh, nice club sandwich.
The gold on behalf of the Shelburne Hotel, I'd say. But yeah, but he's in every right to. He's double vaccinated. He has this very social distancing, like we said. But it's just insane to see how quickly people latch onto things, and it just escalates. It's crazy, and it's really offensive. I mean, so obviously there's been a huge backlash against President Macron in France, and everyone has also been calling him Hitler, and he was depicted that way in a billboard, and it was another huge story. But the American Jewish community came out and said, you know, when you say these things, it's not only offensive to the person, it's offensive to everyone. You know, they said it's outrageous and disrespectful to victims and survivors of the Holocaust. And it's just so funny that, you know, it goes from the president of France, and then our own president in Ireland had this happened to him about maybe last week. Twitter, was it, were calling him a Hitler and a Nazi, and then...
Well, because he signed,
Rory's getting it too.
Because our president properly signed into law things that have been enacted in the Houses of the Oireachtas. And then we got these crowd who sort of went on, not my president. Well, actually, whether you like it or not, he is.
But whatever about the political thing of saying not my president, I think Martha's dead right on the offensiveness of the Nazi allusions, because I've just finished reading the new biography, you know, Hitler, the Rise and the Downfall, the sort of two 700-page tomes on his personal as it is rise and downfall.
Little bit of light reading you're doing.
Yeah, you know, I kill some time on the Saturday afternoon. But When you are reminded of the totality of what the Nazi regime did, it is literally unspeakable. There are no words to encompass the atrocities. And the notion that anybody, for anything, goes to, you're the equivalent of a Nazi. But particularly,
sure, that's Matty McGrath territory, isn't
exactly,
it?
That's it.
And something that's got an enormous amount of attention online and in the news in recent days has been the government's decision to appoint former minister Catherine Zapone to a role of special envoy of freedom of expression and opinion at the United Nations, sort of brought to cabinet apparently without been flagged in advance, approved and announced, and there has been an extraordinary backlash. And now we're asking a lot of it, Anton Savage, whose idea was this anyways?
Well, yeah, this is an interesting troika all wrapped up, because there's three things that people, I think, are getting very irked about. The first is whether or not the post should exist at all, whether we need a special envoy for feeling free to express yourself or whatever it is that they call it. The second then is whether or not Catherine Zapone is qualified to be this position, which we may or may not even want in the first place. And the third thing then is, even if she is qualified, did she get give it in the right way? So even if you answer one, there are still big questions about the other. When you get to the last bit, I think there will be some who will sort of charitably say she mightn't be a bad person for the gig if you accept that it's there. But the manner in which it's given, if you're running a private company, you can do what a colleague of mine years ago called the very man thing, where you see someone come by and you say, Matt, the very man, and I can give you the job. If you're in government with public money, it may be the very man. It still has to go through, or in this instance, woman, it still has to go through public procurement, or people are going to rightly raise questions.
But Martha, whose idea was it? Was it she came along and pitched for a job that nobody in the Department of Foreign Affairs had thought was necessary? Or was it, as we're now been, is now been suggested, a big idea that Simon Coveney, as Minister for Foreign Affairs, had, and then thought, to use Anton's analogy, she's the only woman for the job?
Yeah, this is an interesting one. It's one that our political team has been reporting on a lot this week. And I think there's just been so much coming out about it. It's kind of, it's hard to keep up and no one really knows. I mean, you've got some people who are saying that, you know, Coveney set the whole thing up and that she had asked for it. And then you have, you know, the explanation that she had said, I'm in New York anyway, and I care about these issues. Now, what they're saying is that originally the plan was that she was going to, it would be a position based kind of on LGBTQ plus issues. Now, that's one rumour going around the mill. So they just kind of stepped it up to the longer title that it's been given now. So you can kind of see where it's coming from that. But that's what she's, some people are saying that she said, I was going to be in New York anyway, this would be a good thing to have, we should have it. But either way, I think what everyone is concerned about is the way it came about. And it's in the news so much because it is a paid position. Now, it's not a lot, it's middle management level, and it's only up to 60 days in a year. So they think around €15,000, but it's still a paid role, and she will be travelling internationally, and that is paid with taxpayer money. And then the big headline that came out was that the Taoiseach was blindsided, so to speak, by the appointment, because the proposal hadn't been shown to him before it was brought to Cabinet. So we don't know. All we know is that it seems pretty clear that the Taoiseach didn't know it was coming, and he should have, and the whole government should have, and there is just a lack of communication, which really isn't very surprising.
Of course, it also turns out that there are tweets that she put out herself back in 2015 in which she condemned the practice of appointments the state boards made with a nod or a wink, and she said it is no place in open modern democracy, and she said could damage economic recovery.
Well, I don't know about the last bit, but she's definitely right on the first bit, and I think a lot of people will sit and say, oh yeah, middle management is grand and all of that, but hang on for a minute. If I want to work for a government department, if the salary, not the salary, if the fee that I charge the department is more than, I think it's in the region of about €20,000, well then I have to tender for it. If it's between €5,000 and €20,000, the department is required to get three quotes or proposals from companies who are all qualified to do it and choose the best one out of that group. So they don't even have discretionary power to say, I'll spend €12,000 on a small company. You have to get other quotes. In the same way, even if this is 20 or 30 or 40,000 euro, people say, hang on a minute, it's government money. It should have gone through some kind of process that we understand.
Now, Martha Brennan, is it good news to hear confirmation that the X factor is no more?
Yeah, this one's a little easier to try to deal with. I think the X factor, I think it just shows how little influence it has anymore, that this hasn't been that big of a story. I mean, it wasn't like a huge part of our lifestyle updates this week, and it kind of gone a little bit unnoticed. It's been around for so long, and it kind of faded away from the public. And a lot of people are saying that it's to do with the rise of shows like The Masked Singer and The Masked Dancer, which are, you know, more about the voice, and there's more entertainment, and, you know, our attention spans are getting smaller by the day, and we just want mindless entertainment. I think people just kind of got sick of the sob stories that came with The X Factor, and like a lot of people said, there's only so many times you can hear Simon Cowell putting someone down, and it just, yeah, it's one that kind of escaped this week, which is funny.
It'll get probably revitalized in about 15 years' time, Anton.
Oh, yeah, these things, that there is nothing new in this world, Matt. Like, it's funny, you know, Tommy Tiernan's show on RTE on the Saturday nights, where guests arrive in and he is unbriefed and they sort of arrive in and he has to work out who they are. A lot of the commentary about that said, God, isn't this very creative? Bunny Carr had a programme that was exactly that 40 years ago called I Don't Believe We Met. So there's the Gong Show, there's all of these, there'll be something like The X Factor. However, I am keeping my fingers crossed that this is the start of some kind of a wave. I'm hoping that this is the start of a rejection of meanness and the public exploitation of people. Because whatever about X Factor and whatever, I mean, yeah, Rihanna went on it and you found good singers and isn't it grand for Niall Horan? The base premise of X Factor was we watch it for the car crash. We watch it for the deluded idiot who comes up and humiliates themselves on national TV. And they managed to get, 7 years more out of the ritual humiliation of people who really should have known better. I'm not sure it's going to be mourned as a loss of great television.
Actually, there's just breaking news for both of you. I haven't prepared you for this. Breaking news in the last 10 minutes that the government has agreed that the All-Ireland finals in August will be allowed. 40,000 people will be allowed to go to the hurling and football finals. What a fantastic scramble for tickets this is going to cause, particularly for those of us who were hopeful that Cork might get to the hurling final. But there's a good reaction to it from Brezzy, who says, wonderful news. Now, how about a gig with 100 people? Nope. This is going to be a major issue, I reckon, Martha, with a lot of people in the entertainment sector, the bands, the acts, all the rest of it, and the people who aren't interested in sport, who wouldn't begrudge people having a chance to go to the All-Ireland football or hurling finals, but who might be saying, why can't we go to a gig?
Absolutely. I mean, it's pretty obvious that we put an emphasis on GAA in this country. We just do. It's the way it is. You know, I don't think anyone would argue that it's pretty high up on our list of priorities. But Brezzy's right. There are so many singers, actors, poets like that. They can't do their job right now. And it's not even that they miss interacting with people and the people miss interacting with them. And things are opening up slowly. You know, you can go see things in pods and you can go to, like, you know, outdoor events and stuff, and they're being very careful about it. But you still have things like the smaller, I know Electric Picnic hasn't been, nothing's been said about it yet, but smaller festivals are being cancelled and people are, you know, we're looking forward to them, and now it's all coming back. And I think it will be disappointing for people that don't have any interest in GAA, and they were meant to go to, say, a festival with 15,000 people, and they can't do that, but yet people can go up and watch the All-Ireland. That's going to be quite the debate, I'd say.
Yeah, because the Electric Picnic was moved to late September. Surely by the last weekend in September, weather permitting, lots of people would want to go to an outdoor event, Anton.
Oh yeah, but there's going to be a lot of this. The Taoiseach made a point, and he was actually dead right, where he said that if you look back at the last pandemic in whatever, 1918, it didn't end one day. I think he was referring to Britain's Freedom Day, that these things end not with a bang, but with a whimper. If you look at the AIDS epidemic, not that AIDS ever went away, but the epidemic, the global threat of it, there wasn't a moment where we went, well, that's over. It just petered out, and thankfully COVID is petering out. But it's going to be annoying while it does it.
We were in the middle of it.
I know
you dragged us.
I know, but
I was trying to do it without using the actual word. You
should have told us, Matt. How am I to know?
Well, I mean,
I
brought up
the
issue because I saw
to
a tweet in relation to what's happened in the last 10 or 15 minutes. Martha Brennan from the Irish Examiner, Anton Savage, thank you both very much for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.